It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, Wes Collins. Normally we have his cohort, Cecil Harvell, but Cecil's not with us today. We have Wes Collins instead of Harvell and Collins. And as we begin the program, let me just remind you the number to call, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, or better yet, go online to Harvell and, spell out the word and please, HarvellandCollins.com. So as we begin the program, Wes, you're the solo guest or solo host of the program this afternoon. Good afternoon to you.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Lockwood. How are you?
Doing well. And, you know, we're now midway through the year, 2023. whoever imagined we'd get this far? But anyhow, we got there. So what's on tap today?
You know, I thought I'd talk a little bit about the progression of a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, lawsuits just take a long time. Most people know that. They don't know why it takes so long. They don't understand, you know, the process, all the different things that you have to go through in order to finally get to the end of the lawsuit. I kind of live this every day with many cases going on at different levels and different stages. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about that that process to maybe demystify that for folks so they kind of understand the process in litigation.
Excellent point on that. And to your comment, I mean, you've got individuals who see a friend who's involved or engaged in a lawsuit. And, of course, they always want to ask, what's the status? What's the latest update? As if it's going to be a one-hour program, as we see on TV. So, in essence, it's not that. Am I correct, Wes?
Right. I often joke that, you know, Law and Order, you know, I watch Law and Order sometimes. I enjoy that program. But I thought that's more of a criminal context.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I joke that, you know, the guy is, someone's murdered on Monday and they're trying the case on Tuesday.
Right.
That's not the way it works. And, you know, really in my experience, the civil litigation process, mm-hmm, for cases of any size really moves even more slowly than the criminal. You know, as we see, like, you know, obviously we had years ago the OJ situation. Recently, obviously, all that Murdaugh stuff, mm-hmm, in South Carolina got a lot of attention. And, you know, that was, what was it, maybe a year and a half after the murders, something like that. Maybe it was a couple of years, but it wasn't more than that. You know, they tried the case. And even in civil litigation, it oftentimes takes, surprisingly, you know, much longer than that in some cases. Some cases will get done in a year, you know, year and a half, something like that. But a lot of times, especially with a little bit of the backlog and I think the slowdown of things that we had because of COVID, which I don't even like mentioning, but it's true, that even slowed things down, you know, a little bit more in the civil world. So, but, you know, what starts a lawsuit, and there's different types. I mean, obviously, if we're talking about certain types of litigation, it moves pretty quickly. I think last week or the week before, we were talking about some things that we deal with before the clerk of court.
Mm-hmm.
And right, those are like guardianship cases. Like if you have a guardianship case, well, that's kind of quasi-litigation because in most cases, there's not going to be a jury. Mm-hmm. It's before the clerk. The statute on guardianship requires those to move quickly. You have some pretty tight deadlines as it relates to when things need to be completed as far as when you need to have your trial. There's usually not a whole lot of discovery that's done. And so, you know, your normal guardianship case from beginning to end, you know, it's safe to say normally will be done within, say, 90 days, you know, something like that. And that's a case where this is an adult person that we feel needs a guardian appointed because they have, you know, some type of issues and can't handle their own affairs.
Right.
So that's that. If you've got a summary ejectment case, like what that is like a landlord tenant, you know, someone, mm-hmm, you know, hasn't been paying their rent or they're in breach of their lease or something like that, and the landlord wants them removed from the property. Well, that's a quick trial as well. That's normally within, you know, 10-ish days, about 10 days before the magistrate. But your more typical true lawsuits, plaintiff versus defendant type lawsuits, whether they're in district court and in state court or the superior court, which is the highest level, which is that's where most of my cases are, or if you're in federal court, you know, normally, you know, the process is going to be around 2 years before your case gets to trial.
What?
And
why? That's surprising. Yeah.
So there's lots of reasons why. You know, the lawsuit starts with the complaint being filed. You know, someone is filing a lawsuit. The plaintiff is filing a lawsuit against the defendant. And this could be a motor vehicle accident. Mm-hmm. This could be a breach of contract case. This could be a, you know, in a different type of environment, like a challenge to a will that's actually not called plaintiff defendant. It's called caveator propounder. That's a different type thing. It could be interpretation of a trust document. It could be, you know, a trespass case. Someone came on my property and cut down, you know, all of my valuable trees. I mean, it could be any type of lawsuit, and that's where it starts. Now, once that complaint is filed, then it has to be served. You know, the court obviously the issues a summons. We've heard the summons and complaint. You know, the summons is what brings jurisdiction over the party to the court, and then once that summons and complaint is served, you know, meaning this could be by, you know, served by the sheriff or certified mail, return receipt. Mm-hmm. You know, once that service is perfected, which sometimes takes time in and of itself because you can't find the person,
right?
Or maybe they're dodging service or, you know, whatever it may be. Then once that happens, then they have, you know, 30 days in most cases in state court, 20 days in federal to file an answer. And that's usually, they usually get an order to extend that. So there's normally even more time. So it's normally something like around 60 days before you even get the answer, which is, okay, this lawsuit has all these allegations in it. You have to file an answer to those and raise your defenses, you know, within the, let's say generally 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you could be what's called defaulted because you didn't answer the lawsuit, and that basically you admit everything in the complaint. Now, that's one way for the lawsuit to be over quickly if you don't respond to it. So, I mean, that, it really just, that's the first thing that happens, and that just, that gets you off the runway. And there's, then after that, there's normally a lot of discovery that takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And what we mean by discovery is, you know, let's say that the, you know, whatever kind of law, let's say that the case is something about a challenge to whether the person had capacity at the time that he signed a will, okay? And so obviously one of the things that we need to get when we file that lawsuit is the medical records of this person.
Right.
You know, we need to see how this person was doing. Was this person, is there a dementia presentation, Alzheimer's? Is he oriented times three on during the visits? What were the dates of these visits? Is the family indicating to the provider that he or she is, you know, in the normal progression of the day, you know, having...
Mm-hmm.
You know, not able to handle his or her affairs, you know, what do those records show? Okay, so that in and of itself takes some time because, you know, you've got to get HIPAA releases to get those. They don't just fall from the sky. You know, there's all these procedures you have to go through. But as the plaintiff's attorney, you know, you have the burden to prove these things in most cases. So you can't, when you get to court, you can't be in a situation where you say, well, it was too difficult to get those medical records, so I'm not ready. You can't say, you know, well, we ran into all kind of problems, so I'm sorry, jury, this is the best we could come up with. No, the medical records are there. You need to get them.
Right.
And sometimes it just takes a lot of time. Sometimes in the event that you have problems with getting those, for example, you have to file a motion with the court and wait for the court to hear your motion. And then there, you know, eventually will be a ruling on that. And then the court will normally give them 30 days to produce them. So there's just a lot of process involved in the discovery. And then there's what comes with that, there's also a lot of usually, all right, file this motion, then wait.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a lot of do it and then wait. So that really slows things down. And then, you know, through the discovery process, you're gathering this information, like I said, medical records, and you're putting all of this together, and you're getting the case ready. But then once you have those, then in many cases, what you're going to want to do is take depositions. Then you're going to want to sit down, you know, with the doctor who saw this patient, mm-hmm. for example, since I'm talking about medical records. Well, then you got to get on the doctor's schedule, and you got to get, you know, opposing counsel's availability, and then you got to get your availability, and that could be within a week or two, or it could, the stars might not line up for everyone to be available for 2 months. You just don't know.
So the issue here, and we're talking with Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins, we're talking today about the issue of the progression of lawsuits, and particularly civil lawsuits. Then it's a matter of acquisition of all the information. That strikes me as being probably one of the biggest hurdles that is faced in these civil lawsuits. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, it is.
All right.
There's no doubt about it. It's, you know, gathering the information from the plaintiff's perspective, getting the case ready. I mean, obviously the defendant's wanting to do the same thing.
Right.
The defendant's wanting to get their case ready so they can defend themselves. So gathering all that information, doing all that discovery is quite a laborious process, and there's multiple stages. It's not like when you want to get the medical records of the deceased, since we're talking about medical records. You can pick up the phone and call mm-hmm. the hospital and say, give me John Doe's medical records. No, that's not the way it works. You have to send a discovery request to the other side because, you know, if the other side, for example, in this scenario that I'm laying out for you, is representing the estate, well, mm-hmm. they're the ones that have the right to get the medical records.
Right.
So they've got to get them for you or give you a release to get them. So, yes, just, again, every stage of discovery is tedious and laborious. It's usually not just a simple thing. And then when you put all of that together and everything you need to get, and then maybe even once you get those medical records, you see additional information that you need to gather in the records. You know, it could be that there was a reference to some type of, you know, report that was done by a different doctor
mm-hmm.
that you didn't know about. So then you've got to go through that same process to get that report. Maybe it's a diagnostic report. Maybe it's some kind of diagnostic testing, that like an MRI that was done or something that wasn't yet produced. But you've got to really be, how to say it, to be a good lawyer, you just have to be really good at that.
Right.
You can't miss things.
As the statement goes, I hate to use the term devil, but the devil is in the details. You're constantly looking for the details. And as you uncover one item, it leads you to another item, in other words.
That's correct. And, you know, you have to be, you know, it's almost impossible for a fresh out of law school lawyer to be able to know how to do these things. And the way I say that, the reason I say that is because you have to understand, you know, how this world that I'm describing works
mm-hmm.
in order to make it work for you. And you have to understand what matters in the case, what you need to get, what you don't need to get, what you need to spend time on, what you don't need mm-hmm. to spend time on, you know. And that just takes, that comes with experience. It comes with, you know, doing this a lot. It comes with, you know, taking hundreds, if not thousands, of depositions over the years. It comes with reviewing, going through discovery, or since we're talking about medical records, reviewing, you know, hundreds of sets of medical records, which, you know, I don't know if folks are used to looking at medical records, but normally when you get them, there's a ton of duplication.
Not only that, they use a variety of terms, and you've got to know what to look for. Even looking at my own medical records, I get confused, and I'm looking at details about myself.
Oh yeah, you have the one ER visit, let's say. Well, that's probably 100 pages. You know, you were there for 4 hours. I mean, that's just the way it is. You know, there's just a lot of documentation, maybe not quite 100, but a lot of pages, you know, relative to that visit, you know, with regard to being checked in and the triage, and then one doctor sees you, and then they bring in a specialist, and then, you know, it's just a lot. But we're talking about the progression of a lawsuit, so we're kind of hung up here on what? Discovery. And that really hangs up a lawsuit sometimes.
Yes.
It takes a long time to get through this and to do it properly.
One quick question on that related to discovery, Wes. And again, Wes Collins with us with Harbell and Collins. And I do want to remind folks, as we're talking about this issue, that if you're looking for legal consulting and possibly legal services, let me recommend to you Harbell and Collins. Go to that website, Harbell and, spell out the word and, harbellandcollins.com, or give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050. Wes, in the process of all of this discovery, sometimes you have situations that, due to the length of time, change radically. Is there a sort of an issue of trying to maintain consistency and currency in your documentation? Because, well, for example, let's just real quickly, on the issue of hospital records, suddenly a hospital closes. Is that part of the problem, that sometimes you have to go back and research things that are not readily available anymore?
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. Normally, if we're looking for financial records, mm-hmm. like bank records, okay, and we're looking for bank statements, normally banks only keep those records for, my experience is, 6 or 7 years.
Right.
And if you're looking for bank records that are older than 6 or 7 years, which in many cases we are, I mean, we deal with a lot of financial-related abuse, maybe elder abuse, uh-huh. those kind of type cases, undue influence cases, lack of capacity cases, fraud cases where folks have, you know, wrongfully accessed maybe elderly person's accounts through a power of attorney or otherwise. So we're oftentimes, you know, seeking these records so we can determine, you know, where the money went. Okay.
Right.
So in a lot of these cases, Lockwood, a claim that we bring is called a constructive fraud claim.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason I bring that up is because a constructive fraud claim has a 10-year statute of limitations. That's a really long statute. Most statute of limitations are 3 years from the date of the event or occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like if it was a motor vehicle accident. Well, you have to fight, and it doesn't get resolved by insurance or whatever. You have to file the complaint, summons and complaint, within 3 years of the accident. I mean, that's your typical breach of contract, 3 years. Most statute of limitations are going to be 3 years. Well, the constructive fraud goes back 10 years. The reason it does is because a lot of times when constructive fraud is engaged in, or fraud is engaged in, it's not done out in the open.
Right.
I mean, people don't defraud people right in front of your face. Like a motor vehicle accident happens right in front of your face. I mean, you know you were in an accident. You were injured. You were in it. It happened. But you know when it happened. Well,
mm-hmm.
you could be defrauded and not know it. In most cases, when you're being defrauded, you don't know it. I mean, if you knew you were being defrauded, it's not fraud because you just bought into it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So anyway, 10-year statute of limitations. So that creates a little bit of a problem when we're needing to go back 10 years. For discovery purposes, or to advance our case because we have a statute of limitations of 10 years, but there's only bank records back available to 6. So, you know, sometimes you know, we're really having to dig deep to find, you know, records, so on and so forth, that are, because they're just not readily available. So yes, we are having to take that on a case by case basis. But normally, you know, if we were within that 6-year time frame, maybe 7-year time frame, and sometimes if we're lucky 8 or 9 years, if the respective bank can find the records, then we can go back, you know, a little bit further. But still, we're talking about the process of discovery now, how tedious this is, how laborious it is, how it takes a lot of time. But it has to be done correctly, and it has to be done in the right order, in my opinion.
Right.
And what I mean by that is you normally have to get that written discovery and discovery request done and in hand before you go take depositions. You know, for example, if I'm having trouble getting some medical records, well, I'm not going to go take the depositions of the medical providers at all until I have those medical records.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to need to ask them about those records,
right.
Okay? And if I'm having a hard time getting the records, I don't have them, well, I'm not going to just go ahead and set the depositions anyway. I've got to get the records first. So it's, you know, it just is a process. And so then when you finally get through that process of the discovery and getting the case ready and taking the depositions you need to take, and the other side's taking the depositions they need to take, then normally at that point in time, if any party thinks that they can prevail on a motion like to dismiss or motion for summary judgment, which is essentially a motion to dismiss based on the facts of the case that mm-hmm. have been basically learned through discovery, then there's a what's called a motion practice with regard to that. You file a motion before the court. You file a brief with the court. You argue before the court, and that's like a mini trial in and of itself. That's, again, not like show up one day and we're just going to go ahead and let both sides argue this. No, you've got to get everything organized. You have to write a brief, which is, a laborious process. You've got to do the research on it to explain to the court why you are entitled to the summary judgment. You've got to use, you know, precedent from other cases so the court can follow that. You know, you've got to notice it up at a time period for the hearing that both sides are available. And then you've got to find a term of court, you know, that that everyone is available, notice it for that, and then go through that process. So that's kind of a summary judgment is really what I've just described. That's a really big deal. Because that's, if you lose on that, your case is over.
Oh, really?
Yep. Your case is over if you lose on summary judgment. So you have a right to appeal, which, again, an appeal could take, you know, 2 years.
Uh-huh.
So here we are going through the appeal process with the, you know, Court of Appeals, whether it's federal or state, and it could take a very long period of time. I mean, I have one right now up at the North Carolina Court of Appeals, and their opinions come out on Tuesday, so I'll be interested to check my email this morning to see if it's there. But I've been doing that for 2 years now. I've been waiting forever. So, because I thought we probably would get an opinion on this particular case last July. I remember thinking that. Yeah, it'd probably be around July. Well, here we are in July, and a year later, I still don't have an opinion. So that is just waiting on the court. That's all that is. So that, again, is another delay.
We're talking with Wes Collins today about the issue of lawsuits, the progression of civil lawsuits. I'm going to use that description, right?
Right. Okay. That's right.
So, and again, I go back to the comment I kind of joked about at the opening of our program, and I said, you know, we watch these legal cases on TV, and within an hour we get all the discovery, we've got all the conclusions, the jury meets, and we have a judgment. The fact that this takes so long in your conversations with your clients and both sides of the argument, I'm thinking as well, plaintiffs and defendants, the conversation, I'm sure, at times gets very, very tiresome because, you know, they want to be done with it. But that's just not. Is there a? I mean, do you take it to some sort of? Is there a way to accelerate the process?
Well, yeah, clients need to be. They just have to be, if they're going to be involved in the process, patient with the process.
Mm-hmm.
They need to, you know, trust their attorney. And I'm not saying that every client should trust their attorney.
Right.
I'm just saying that they need to have the right attorney.
Right.
And the attorney, in my opinion, needs to communicate with the client. And I don't mean like an everyday hold your hand kind of thing.
Right.
But I mean from the beginning, look, this is what the process is. There will be long periods of time when there's not much going on based on what you feel like, but there's always things going on. And then when there are material aspects of the case that come up that we need to discuss, you know, I'll be in touch with you about those. I'll discuss those. Obviously, the attorney cannot settle the case for the client without the client's consent. So, I mean, that kind of goes without saying. But there needs to be a level of, you know, trust, a high level of trust and comfort with the attorney, because most litigation attorneys who do any level of practice, I mean, if they really are true litigation attorneys and not dabbling in litigation, which I think is a very dangerous thing,
mm-hmm.
then they're going to be very busy. I mean, litigation attorneys are just, they're just very busy. Not only are they very busy, they don't control their schedule either. And what I mean by that is the court oftentimes is saying, this is when this is due. This is when we're going to have this hearing. Be here for this. You know, this is when this trial is going to be. Move your everything around, and this is when we're going to do it, especially the federal court. The federal court very much so doesn't ask a whole lot. Meaning they don't say, hey, guys, we need to have this hearing. When is it okay with everybody? No. They just set it, and that's when it's going to be. It doesn't matter if you have other things in the way. Now, if you've got something that you can't miss, then you can file a motion to continue with the federal court to get it changed. But they don't make that easy either. When you file that motion with the federal court, you have to do the work of preparing a brief with it as well, and you know, that's a whole process in and of itself. So if you really want to have something moved, you know, you're going to have to do some work in order to get it moved. It's not just not a phone call, hey judge, I'm not available. So there's, you know, litigation attorneys are just busy. I don't know how else to do it. How else to explain it?
Right.
It's just the type of practice where it is work intensive. So there's that. But yes, the clients, if they're not patient in through litigation, they normally will learn some patience because it's just the way it is.
All right, we could title this this afternoon. Patience in lawsuits.
Patience 101.
Patience, right. 101 with Wes Collins of Harvell & Collins. And again, I want to remind you, for more information, don't hesitate to give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050, or give them a reach out to them, that is, via email at it's wcollins@harvellandcollins, or if you want, go to their website, Harvell, and spell out the word and, please, HarvellandCollins.com. And with that, Wes, thanks very much for your time. Appreciate this.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Let's talk legal on the Talk Station.